Hello, and thank you for choosing this Analyst Insight podcast from the Information Security Forum. Hello to our regular listeners and to those who are joining us for the first time. Welcome. The numbers are growing steadily. It's a movement. It's not just a podcast. Thanks to everyone for supporting us. Tell your friends, tell your colleagues, tell your enemies. We're trying to make these podcasts unpredictable by looking at lots of different topics. So if there is an issue you think we should tackle, if you have questions and comments, or if you want to appear on this podcast, then by all means get in touch. Contact details are on the Audio Boom page where we collect every episode. This episode, however, is the first of a series we want to do about careers in information security. With the help of experts and novices who are working in the business, we want to try to give a sense of what it's like to work in the many different branches of information security. Everything from penetration testing to security architecture and all things in between. We'll talk a little more about what we're going to be looking at later in this episode. This podcast will set the scene for the future ones in this series with the help of our own in-house experts. I'm not sure I count as one of those experts, but I get a free pass because I'm presenting. My name is Mark Ward. I'm a senior research analyst at the ISF. And I guess very lately, recently, embarked on a career in information security, having been an avid observer of the field and developments in it for many years while a technology journalist. But definitely an expert. Joining us is Bharat Thakrar, a very experienced InfoSec professional. He's a former CISO, a BISO, who's worked across many different disciplines. Hello, Bharat. Your first time on the podcast, so welcome to you.
Thank you, Mark. Yes, it is my first time. Looking forward to it.
So just to ask you a quick question about why we're doing this, because I guess, are you looking for trying to get generate some advice that maybe would have helped you when you got started? I don't know what sort of, whether it was a sort of, yeah, you would have liked some more guidance in those early days.
Yeah, it's a combination of that, Mark. And like many of our team in ISF, part of our time is actually guiding and coaching younger people. And so what that triggered off was thinking back to my time when I spent most of my career in large organizations. And I found that getting specific career advice was really difficult. Trying to plan your next steps to what the next role might be was very hard to come by. And so I think now, if we can provide that kind of guidance to young people or even people at different stages of their careers, I think that's really helpful. So that's, I think, part of the motivation.
Yeah, there's definitely a jumble of career paths out there, aren't there? It's good to get that sense of what jobs are available and actually what's involved in them. And another expert here to help with this discussion, and he's an expert across many different fields, is Mark Chaplin, a principal at the ISF, who's also a former CISO, and he also has really great connections across the sector, very busy talking to member organisations and the folks that work in them. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Mark.
Yeah, that's a bit odd. Yeah, Mark and I are both bibliophiles, so I feel a need to ask you what you are reading right now. I know you have a very eclectic taste, so just the top two or three, if there's an area you're particularly interested in.
I am reading an amazing book by the infamous Jim Collins called Good to Great. And it's about the difference between organizations that are good and those that are outstanding and great. And the reason why I'm reading that is I read a lot of leadership books because I'm trying to help security and risk leaders engage better with the business, establish and build that relationship. And obviously, as we're focusing on careers, everybody starts out at some point and they aspire to reach something. And we're really trying to help organizations achieve the best they can from a risk management cybersecurity perspective. So yeah, Good to Great, amazing book. I'm just about to finish it and enjoying every chapter in it.
All right, sounds good. My reading has been not quite so focused on InfoSec, but there's a couple of good ones. One I just finished, it's called The Ruthless Lady's Guide to Wizardry, Fantasy, Fiction. Great story, lots of very creative language in that, but not very relevant to the field. But one that I've done literally only just started a couple of days ago, which looks like it's going to be great, and one I'll return to quite a bit, is by Robin Hanson, who's quite a hard-headed social scientist and economist, called The Age of M being an embodied mind, and he's trying to put some hard speculation, I suppose, not fictional, around what would happen if we had the ability to copy our brains, put them into artificial bodies, what would be the social, cultural impact of that. But the reason that I'm quoting that at length is because of something that, a phrase that jumped out at me from the introduction there, which he said that the future matters more than the past because we can influence it, which struck me as very
a very good way to approach, you know, that particular subject, but just generally. And I guess, Bharat, that's why we're here and that's why we're doing this, because we want to try and give people a sense of, influence them, like I say, bring people into the field, because we need, you know, we need lots of fresh bodies.
Exactly. In fact, actually, just talking about books, the one that I've got on my shelf at the moment that I've been looking at is called The Resiliency Advantage by Al Siebert. And really, it's picking up that point that you've just made, Mark, about looking at the past and future, and then saying, you know, generally people say, well, resilience is about bouncing back, but it's actually a lot more than that. It's actually trying to say, okay, how do my learnings from the past influence my future to the point where I can operate no matter what the circumstance is? And I think, you know, we're moving into an environment where it almost becomes unpredictable what's going to happen in 6 months, a year time. So having that type of resiliency mindset is going to be helpful for most people. So I think what we want to try and do is to bring aspects like that into the podcast, because they will influence careers, no matter which career that you're following.
Yeah, I think, and certainly that resilience is as much about strength in depth, and that's got relevance to, I think, this discussion about careers, because there's a survey just I found, which from the UK, but I think the statistic is common across the world, saying that something like 51% of all private sector firms are lacking basic cybersecurity skills, be that people, be that, you know, skills in other workers in who aren't dedicated to information security. But it's becoming just, you know, business as usual. People need to know about this stuff. And I think, I don't know if Mark, if you find that in more and more of the organizations you talk to, that InfoSec, those basic knowledge is important across many different parts of those.
It is, and you know, the cyber landscape is, without trying to use too many cliches, is evolving very fast. It is complex and it is complicated, and therefore all organizations need a workforce that is cyber savvy in order for them to make informed decisions ultimately that ensure the business is effective and can operate effectively. But because it's such a large, complex topic, there are lots of divisions, there are lots of, you know, separate elements of that discipline or that domain. And so therefore, it's not a straightforward case of, well, we just need more cyber savvy people. You need specialists in a lot of different domains. And this is, you know, one of the things I think Bharat's going to explore or talk about, because all organizations are struggling all the way up to board level. Even at board level, you know, there's a general appreciation or understanding of, you know, the issues and the challenges. There's still a great deal of uncertainty, though, as to what it is, how important is it, how will it really affect the organization in the future, what do we need to do about it. So there are lots of challenges we've got to help organizations address all the way up to the board level. And one of the ways of dealing with that is establishing an effective risk security workforce, some of whom are going to have to specialize in different domains of cybersecurity.
Yeah, I think that's a good segue into, you know, talking about some of the reasons for taking this on. That I think it's the UK Cybersecurity Council, Bharat, that you're following their 16 specialisms, and we're not going to do all 16, but they've identified some career pathways, and I guess that, you know, that's definitely going to be something that we're going to be exploring, trying to find people in some of the more high profile specialisms at different levels.
Yes, exactly. I think what it is just picking up on Mark Chaplin's point there, you know, organizations are changing, and often what transpires is that they need a skill set and they need that quickly. And as you said, Mark, you know, there is a shortage of resources in this, skilled people in this discipline here. And so identifying exactly what that requirement is and what they would be doing is absolutely core. But also, you might find that there might be people in your organization who might have transferable skills. And so the solution is not always to go to the market and find people. And we have to get good at being able to move, you know, skill sets and actually help people acquire new skills as the environment changes, you know, and the business changes. And so part of the answer really is being adaptable. And, you know, I know we'll touch on the issues of artificial intelligence and things like that, because that'll demand another change in our thinking. Just to go back to, yes, it is, there are multiple disciplines, and the UK Cybersecurity Council, which has been set up to professionalize this cybersecurity industry in the UK and to provide chartered status and things like that. And so I think they are giving some guidance in this area, because it is quite difficult to navigate. You know, for instance, if you are looking at pen testing or something like that, which would be one of the topics that we'll pick up on one of the episodes, there are multiple ways of becoming a good pen tester, and there's so many certifications. And it's almost mind-boggling to figure out which one to go for, and very little advice because it's quite a commercial space as well. So yes, you know, I think the need to give guidance and advice in this area is quite prominent now.
Yeah, I think as well, we're going to explore this in accompanying blogs as well. We'll point people towards resources, and we're going to try and source some novices and experts in those fields, get some good testimony and some great war stories, I'm sure, about how people got into this industry and, you know, what their day-to-day job is like. But just, if we can just talk about, I don't know how we all got into this industry. I'll talk about myself first, if we can, our origin stories, not to make us sound like superheroes, but maybe a little, maybe slightly heroic about it. But my first job as a reporter was writing about networks, just as local area networks were starting to emerge, and, you know, first rumblings of the internet and the World Wide Web taking off. And I had a strong interest in science fiction. The Shockwave Rider by John Brunner was a very influential book, Neuromancer by William Gibson as well, and all the cyberpunk. And then there was a lot of incidents like the Morris Worm and, you know, the early computer viruses being sent out, which initially were sort of, you know, quite gentlemanly in the sense that they didn't do damage, they were just about people showing off. But I got interested in that, and then that just became an interest throughout my journalistic career and led me eventually to the ISF, though it was very apparent once I joined the ISF that my knowledge of information security was actually pretty scant. You know, it was all surface and headlines and gosh wow, rather than, you know, the deep actual stuff that people do day to day. But Bharat, I don't know if you want to talk about how you got into the industry. Was it planned, an accident, or has it gone the way you expected, or just been a bit surprised day to day?
You know, Mark, I don't think there's anyone, almost anyone, who could say that in the cybersecurity space it was a planned entry, at least for people of our age. You know, I think most of us are accidental cybersecurity professionals. But I think mine sort of came, my background was in hardware design. My degree was in electronic engineering at the start. And so, but it morphed into understanding why systems fail and what keeps them going. And then we did a bit around the year 2000 bug, the Millennium bug. But essentially, I spent quite a few years in BT, and in 2012, there was the London Olympics. And really, the whole thing was around how to make sure that none of the networks, IT systems, have any issues, problems, hacks, failure, anything like that. So it was the resiliency of that was the key thing. And then I came across people like Mark Chaplin, you know, because we had association with ISF, and I saw the amazing work that these guys did in the sense of understanding, you know, research, delving deeply into particular topics and getting expertise in that.
Yeah, I think interesting that you were involved in the Olympics, because I think that brings it home to a lot of people that a lot of this isn't just in an office somewhere, it can have real world impacts as well. I don't know, Mark, I'm not sure about your origins in this field, or sort of whether it's similar kind of things to Bharat, just you fell into it accidentally, or if it was much more planned.
I think my origins are quite modest. I don't think I originally set out to be where I am today, and I'm probably still searching for, you know, the ultimate role. But just to give you an idea, when I started out in the industry, the actual industry didn't exist. So the first time I came in contact with computers was probably in 1990. And I became a computer operator at GC Marconi at the time. And so back in those days, I was introduced to DEC, VAXes, and PDP systems.
Fabulous.
Which most people listening to this will probably not know what that is.
To go to a museum to see them now.
PT-100 terminals, working with Sonos, which was obviously pre-Solaris on Sun Microsystems platforms, convex supercomputers, which, you know, these computer rooms were in the basement of buildings back then. So, you know, I have been around a few years. But one of the things I wanted to sort of explore is I've always been presented with opportunities, and there's always an element of chance in whatever you're doing, even if you're doing risk management. There's always an element of chance in where you end up. So there was a particular phone call I remember that I took because my boss was out of the office, and that led to me getting an interview instead of him. And I moved from GC Marconi to another organization where it really opened my eyes to the opportunities. And at that time, that was probably around 1994. So big chunky laptops were just coming into play. You know, systems were being networked by that point. The mobile phones were really chunky. The internet was just starting to become known and popular. And so I was doing a lot of work in there. And it wasn't until sort of towards the end of the 90s that I started working on integrating systems. I got involved in the Y2K project, a little bit like Barrett was just referring to there. And it was towards the end of the 90s that really firewalls, intrusion detection systems started becoming popular as things were being interconnected via networks. And as we got to around 2000, I started specializing in PKI and encryption. Of all things, I never set out to do that, but I ended up doing that. And of course, we all know at our age that PKI was going to solve all our security Absolutely. Problems, and yep. we were going to be without work.
Yeah, that's why the governments were so down on it, wasn't it? Yeah, export and munitions and things.
So that was the early 2000s, and then I became security manager, which was, you know, the precursor to the CISO role, and that's when I started understanding the importance of business continuity, engaging with the business leaders, and understanding strategy and things like that. But it wasn't until I joined the ISF in 2004 that I really had my eyes open to, you know, what this industry, profession, community was going to look like. And I've been very privileged at the ISF to work here for 18 plus years and get exposure to all different types of roles in cybersecurity, risk management, different industry sectors. It's been absolutely amazing. So, you know, I'm really glad we're having this conversation about what do these careers look like? How do they evolve? Because in my cases, it was just, you know, working for good leaders, working in great organizations, and surrounding myself with, you know, great people. And I think that's sort of part of the recipe for success.
Yeah, I think, the industry has changed a lot, because I remember, certainly as a reporter around the 2000s, DDoS attacks started, Yahoo got taken out, and certainly that drove a lot of the security industry to go from, you know, sort of, okay, maybe you need this, to you definitely need this. And then obviously there was a lot of, I remember one amazing interview I did with a guy who did some of the first anti-DDoS protections, and he realized sort of, and he was a bit of a, not quite a wild child, but he was, surfing that boundary between, you know, with gray hat and white hat and black hat. And he realized that quite a few of his customers who were running gambling websites were actually organized criminals, because they were the ones who were taking each other out. And it's just like, wow, that was a hell of an interview to do. Just sort of, you know, he was he was getting established around 2000 and just beyond that, and then I bumped into him a few years after that and kept in touch, because he was a really smart guy.
So you see, over 20 years ago, even then, criminal groups or criminals were still thinking very much with a business mindset. You look at how they've evolved now, you know, they're competing with genuine, legitimate commercial organizations. Another thing that, you know, if anyone wants to come into this industry or this career needs to be aware of.
Yeah, because I think, Barrett, I don't know if we want to try and tackle some of those misconceptions, but also give people a good sense of what's possible in the career, because I don't know, do people expect that they're going to get issued with a badge and a gun, that, you know, they're the people on the front line, they're sort of the frontiers, the ones with the arrows in the back? I think there are people just don't know what's involved in InfoSec, and that needs addressing.
And Mark, actually, that was my thinking for a long while. You know, it's I was involved in the security industry, but it was like, you know, the pen testing was fairly low key, and the intrusions or breaches were small scale and everything like that. And actually, in fact, I remember a discussion with Mark Chaplin when he was doing a deep dive in, I think it was the Equifax breach, Mark, where you were looking at all the material that was there, and also some study that the US Senate had done and understood how this affects financial organizations. And actually, that was my first deep understanding of how this affects the whole organization. And since then, we've learned that, you know, that organization, actually, it took them 5 years to get back to where they were. And I think multiple changes, huge investment. I think, Mark, you you went into the detail of that, right?
Yeah, I think it's a great case study. And just when you look at the losses for that organization, it's only the, I guess, the reputation, the size of the organization that allowed them to come through it. And they've got a very good CISO today, a very impressive CISO. So it does show, you know, organizations can come through that, but it requires a lot of effort by really good teams working together. And, you know, whether you're technical, operational, whether you're a leader, you all need to pull together. So it's a fact of life. You know, we've talked about this a lot. Resilience is the number one priority for all organizations. I would challenge anyone that suggests something else, regardless of your maturity, your skill sets, your knowledge, experience, you need to be prepared. And so, you know, that's one thing I suspect we'll explore as part of this series of podcasts, is looking at the resilience topic as well, because organizations need really good people that are switched on, understand the business, they're agile enough to be able to help the organization detect, respond, contain, recover, resume business operations in the event of, you know, significant cyber attack or equivalent. So it's a good case study. I know we're not really talking about case studies on the podcast today, but there's a lot out there like that as well. And I think it goes to show the complexity of this environment and the fact that we need good people and we need a lot of them, not just a handful. You know, you need that. You know, organizations are successful because they have a very broad range of skill sets, often overlapping as well.
So, Mark, what we're going to do in the podcast is to take a particular specialization, such as threat intelligence or security architecture or pen testing, something like that, and then look at it from three different stages, if you like, of a career. At the start level, so that would be the new entrant level, what are the things that he or she might need to have in place in order to enter the industry, a new graduate or something like that. And then after 4 or 5 years, you know, in that particular specialization, you might have a good knowledge, a good set of experiences and some key projects that you worked on. So what are the questions that you'd be asking yourself at that stage to say, okay, what's my next role? Should I specialize further in this area? Can I move laterally? What would be a natural successor to this, my experience now? And then at the highest level, you know, the expert level, that would be someone who's been in the industry in that particular discipline and been at the top of their game to try and understand what are the changes, what are the movements in the industry, what's going to happen in the next 5 years or so. So again, that'll give a perspective for people earlier in their careers to say, okay, if the industry is changing in this direction, maybe I need to take some of those factors into account in my decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that'll be incredibly useful because certainly those 16 specialisms, looking at them, there's some I recognise and some I used to talk to quite a lot of pen testers because they do some of the sexier stuff. But equally, there's a lot of information security work that is, you know, as Mark said, just, you know, having that impact and making a difference to an organisation as well. I mean, that's real proper influence and, you know, value. And certainly having done some work on roles of CISOs and things like that as well, that's at a higher level, some of whom they've come from very technical places, they're really good, you know, the best ones are really good at influencing their organization, and there's real satisfaction to be had in that as well. So I think, yeah, I'm looking forward to finding these folks and seeing how they operate at different levels. I think we're going to find some great folks and be some real real value, and like I say, we can explore some of what information security is really all about day to day, which sometimes we don't see that much of. I don't know, Mark, are you all surprised about in organizations when you go and talk to them sort of what people do day to day?
I'm not surprised what they do, but, and I don't think it's unique to cybersecurity industry or the community, but, you know, most professionals we engage with are flat out, you know, they are, we use the term firefighting, but, you know, it is a challenging role to come into. You know, we do need more people, and we need people that are resilient and courageous and skilled and agile and lots of adjectives like that. But one thing I would like to emphasize, and again, if there's anyone listening on the podcast that comes from a background other than technology and business, is I believe very much in, we need more people in the industry from a philosophical perspective. You know, philosophers, critical thinkers, people that could come in and think slightly differently. Because I think a lot of the challenges that we're trying to deal with in the industry, which we've been talking about, to be fair, years, if not decades, some of them are just like perpetual problems that keep coming back. We don't seem to be able to iron out. And so therefore, you know, it'd be great to see more people coming in from different backgrounds, different disciplines, to bring a different view, you know, to educate some of us that have been doing this for decades. You know, I'm still learning things every day, whether it's from reading, engaging with our members, and we talk to our members every day, but also just, you know, the younger generation coming into the ISF. You know, we've got an amazing team. I've got an amazing team. So we really need to sometimes think differently about solving some of these challenges so that, you know, all our members and organizations globally can start to get ahead of the attackers and the adversaries that are out there, as an example.
Yeah, I think those new entrants are going to be very important. I mean, I've talked to my kids about what I do day to day and they don't quite understand it, but I think they're, one of them is doing philosophy, so maybe at university, so perhaps I'll talk to him about getting that critical thinking into organisations. But it, just to, as well, end with a bit of a speculative discussion about information security. I'd like to say we've talked about the fact that there's skill gaps out there, but is that going to be solved by AI, machine learning, ChatGPT? Is that the future for all of us? Just automation is going to mean we don't need people anymore. We just let the machines handle it. Quite a big question, but.
Well, what one thing I suppose is very clear is that the future is totally unpredictable. I mean, who knew the impact that, you know, this ChatGPT, which was introduced last November, and everyone talking about it. I think one of the key things that drives me is that we are in an environment, and probably cybersecurity is probably like no other profession, in that the adversary is always going to be one step ahead because that's their business model. And for us to have any level of success, we have to keep up. So this profession, probably more than any other, probably other than AI maybe, it is changing rapidly and it needs to keep pace with it. So that means that our lives are always going to be unpredictable and interesting and fun.
And that's why we need those guides and those pathways, because, you know, to an extent you can plot some of this, but equally as you get into an organization it will change. And, you know, certainly I saw that reporting on this field, it just changes sometimes week by week and definitely month by month, and just, you know, different things come up. Mark, I don't know if are you sanguine about ChatGPT, or is it, do you think it's always going to be people? I mean, that's what it comes down to.
I mean, I haven't had time to look at that, Mark. Yeah. I speak to a lot of people, certainly on a weekly basis, who are experimenting and using it. And even now, I think organizations are suddenly realizing, oh, if we put data in there, what does it mean? So I haven't put any data in ChatGPT, but I know people are. And I'm sure a few people out there have actually asked ChatGPT, you know, how do we solve the challenges that we haven't managed to solve over the last 10, 15, 20 years or so? But I think, again, AI, machine learning, these emerging technologies, and that's obviously something our Threat Horizon team looks at a lot, are still not clearly understood by most individuals, you know, inside or outside cybersecurity, risk management. And so it is a little bit problematic, because you have some people looking, saying it's going to solve all our problems and our solutions are AI driven or AI based or whatever it might be. But I think the challenge is we've still got fundamental problems that haven't been fixed just through efficient processes and through efficient use of skill sets and traditional technologies. So I think we're going to see a lot of change imminently, I think around the corner, with, you know, how AI is being adopted, used, misused. And I think it's just going to add a layer of complexity on an already complex landscape or environment in which our members, you know, new people coming to the industry are having to deal with. So it's not an area I focus on. I actually spend more of my time on psychology and behavioral economics and human judgment and decision theory and things like that. So will it help there? Possibly. But at the moment, I think there's always a danger, and again, this is a little bit of advice for people coming to the industry, there's always a danger that some of this might distract professionals from actually the priority stuff of just getting the basics right.
Yeah.
So I'm watching this space, and I'm watching you closely, Mark, because you're doing research in this space. And
that's
the same with Barrett. You know, I use both of you guys to help me understand some of these topics, because they're areas that I don't focus on particularly. But it's going to be exciting. Let's face it. We've got plenty of work ahead of us.
Yeah, certainly for myself. I remember from my, I studied a bit of philosophy in my undergraduate degree, and the quite disappointed in the first few weeks when one of my lecturers said, we don't have all the answers, but at least we're asking the questions. And I think that's what we need to do for philosophy, is just, sorry, not for philosophy, for ChatGPT and AI and things like that, sort of ask questions about what they're doing for us and making sure that people understand. You may not have the answers for it, but you know, you need to consider the problems. And I think, so just closing thoughts then, InfoSec, good place to work, bad place to work? I mean, for myself, just, yeah, it's served me well throughout my career. It's been endlessly fascinating. I have a really good time since joining the ISF, you know, great bunch of people. And again, it's changed a lot since I've been here. So yeah, for me, a thumbs up, it's a great place to be. Barrett, I don't know.
I think it's just a really excellent place. And I think for the reasons that we've talked about, but also, I think we need to make it clear that it's not just for the technical people. You know, there are many, many roles that require psychology, as Mark was saying, you know, legal expertise, you know, governance, risk, all of those things. They don't have to be technology. I think we've got to acknowledge that we live in a technological society, and that drives a lot of the thinking, but you don't have to be a coder to do all of this, many of the roles that we'll be talking about.
And Mark, for yourself, good place to be?
Absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't be in this sector for more than 20 years, 30 years in technology, but probably 20, 25, just in information security, cybersecurity, or whatever it's going to be called in the future. So there's a lot of work to be done. We need really good people in this industry. You know, organizations need good people in this industry. And I think it's very exciting. And you can specialize in very cool disciplines, or you can generalize, or you can work into a leadership role. And so, you know, there's plenty of opportunity to actually stand out as well. So yeah, I'm all for it. And I really wish you well on these podcasts. And hopefully I can come back and talk to some of your guests as well, because I've got a few ideas about some really great role models in the industry that we should have on as well.
Yeah, definitely. We should, we're keen to expand the roster of guests. So thanks, Barrett. Thanks, Mark. And thanks, everyone else, for listening. Tell your friends. Tell your colleagues. You can now find ISF podcasts on all major podcast platforms. If you look at the show notes for our page on Audioboom, you can subscribe there to make sure you don't miss an episode. And who would want to miss an episode? The podcasts are also available on securityforum.org, where you can also learn more about ISF research, tools, and guidance.